We'll call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Yeah, we are starting a little bit late. It's 25 minutes before 10 o'clock. We are occupied with another meeting with the other co-chairs of the Senate Finance Committee. So I apologize to members of the committee. Today, present at the table is co-chairman McKinnon, vice chairman Bishop, Senators Von Imhoff, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson, and Senator Machicki. Welcome to the Senate Finance Committee's first hearing regarding the operating budget. We are going through a little bit different process this year on the operating budget, primarily Senator Olson. Senator Olson is at the table. I thought I mentioned his name, but we are going through a different process this year, not doing business as usual. So the Senate has come up with a plan to try to address the shortfall, some $3 billion. We're targeting an additional $300 million in reductions to the state operating budget. The governor has presented two plans to raise revenue, revision of the PFD plan, and to address motor fuel tax. And he has submitted an operating budget. If all three of those were to be implemented, the state of Alaska would still be facing $874 million deficit next year. That's not to say that additional reductions or revenue measures may be addressed by this legislature, but given operating under those premises, if we were able to even accomplish the $300 million reduction that the Senate is targeting this year, the legislature, the state of Alaska, would still be operating a deficit of well over half a billion dollars next year. So it is with this that looking back at what we've been able to accomplish as a legislature in reductions over the course of the last several years, we have made substantial reductions, but there have been the four big drivers of the budget are the, one of them is the university, the Department of Transportation, the HES budget, the DOT budget. So this is a little bit different, a different process. I've appointed subcommittee chairs, but we plan on having overviews of the four major drivers at the full finance table so that all the members can get an understanding of what these four major drivers are doing and providing services to the people of Alaska. In all years prior to this, we've had an overview of all the departments and not concentrating on any specific one, and the subcommittee chairs have had that responsibility. The subcommittee chairs are going to continue to operate and come forward with their recommendations, but since the Senate has taken this different approach, conducting business as usual, we are having hearings, and the first one today is the University of Alaska. So with that, we have the university present with us, the president, Jim Johnson. So I would have you proceed and bring whoever you want to the table and assist with your presentation. The intent is to have as detailed as possible understanding of the services that the university provides to the people of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your remarks referring first to business as usual. It's not possible going forward, and I echo that belief and that statement, and I think if you were, and as I'll describe here in the presentation today, you'll see that we're not moving forward in that business as usual manner. I'd also like to second your point here about the university being one of the four major drivers of budget, and I hope you'll see in this presentation today it's one of it's also one of the state's most important drivers of our economy and of our future. So we'll try to make that point here today. And then finally, in terms of introductory remarks, I'd like to acknowledge the Senate's plan and its fiscal focus and its attention to making sure that that government is operating in the most cost-effective possible way. We'll address how the values that we provide the state here, and one of our strong commitments and priorities is absolutely cost effectiveness. So with those opening remarks, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to walk through the presentation relatively quickly, and I would hope that members of the committee would ask questions, and we can have a bit more of a conversation if that's permissible.
That is permissible.
Okay, thank you, sir. Well, we, in 1915, Congress said there shall be an Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. In 1917, the territorial legislature said there shall be an Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. So 100 years ago, we're celebrating that 100th anniversary this year in 2017. And then, of course, we have our roots and our origin in the Constitution itself and in statute. Our regents, according to the Constitution, govern the University of Alaska subject to law. And here's our mission statement as approved by the Board of Regents. It is similar to other mission statements you would see in other land-grant universities across the United States in terms of research, public service, and teaching mission, but it is also unique in its emphasis on the North, on Alaska, and of the diverse peoples and values and viewpoints of the people here in Alaska.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
I would like to acknowledge two senators that are in the audience today. Senator Gardner and Senator Stevens are attending this presentation in person as well. Thank you.
Please. Very good. Proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit more on our educational mission, and we'll go into more depth here during the presentation. Education research, the discovery of new knowledge that we bring into the classroom, and also service we provide to Alaskans all across the state through cooperative extension. And in fact, almost every one of our faculty members has a service responsibility, and they provide that service to communities they live in and support. 100 years of service. Our first campus opened in 1922. Six Alaskans walked from downtown Fairbanks to the hill, Troth Yeda. And from that time, we have 15 campuses across the state today, from Ketchikan in southeast all the way up to Kotzebue in the Arctic. One gentleman walked across the stage, John Shanley, in 1923. He had some college and no degree. In fact, we lead the nation today in the percentage of Alaskans with some college and no degree. But our first graduate was in that situation, too. So fast forward to 2016, and the chairman was there this past spring when we celebrated a couple thousand of those 4,800 who walked across the stage this past year. We're the number one higher education institution in Alaska by most measures and most affordable in the United States if you take our tuition and divide it into household income. And we're the world's number one research university on Arctic subjects as measured by citations in academic journals and publications. And it's not even close. You look at University of Washington or Harvard or Columbia or Princeton, and they're way, way down the list compared to your university. We serve the state, by far the largest state in the country. We touch the, if you transpose us onto the other 48 states, as you know, we touch the Atlantic and the Pacific. When I'm in meetings with my colleagues across the country, I say we've got a campus in South Carolina, we've got one in Iowa, we've got one in South Dakota, and another in Oklahoma, just to give you a sense of the breadth of the service area that we provide and cover. Our three universities, our 12 community campuses across the state, multiple outreach centers, and of course through our online programs in that blue area there where you don't have dots, we have students. And in that blue area where we don't have dots, we have researchers who are seeking to understand what's happening in our state. In terms of benefits, we asked the McDowell Group to have a look at the economic impact of the University of Alaska on the state. You see here the large number of jobs that result from university activity. We're a big piece of the economy in this state. We are a driver here, impact north of $1 billion a year. You put a dollar into us and we generate $3 of economic activity. And of course, on the research front, if you give us a buck, we generate $4.1 on average. There are some programs, real prominent programs, that are north of $6 or $7 return for a dollar of state investment. Here are just some of the 60 research centers all across the state. UAF, UAA, and UAS are all represented here. I think you know very well of some of the great work done by the Geophysical Institute. ICER in particular does very relevant public policy research that's of value to us. The Arctic Domain Awareness Center is a relatively new center led by UAA with a lot of research support from UAF doing work for the Department of Homeland Security. And its primary client is the U.S. Coast Guard. And they're focusing on operators, people who are increasingly going to be operating in the north. What do they need to be aware of as they do that? And it's been a very successful center. That's, again, new. It's getting $2.5 million a year, and we'll be heading north of that, I'm confident, going forward. It represents also the very close tie we have with the military in Alaska. The leader of that group is a retired Air Force Major General, and he has tremendous contacts in the defense community and also was himself internationally posted, so he's got contacts across the north. So very important work. And as you go down this list, health, environment, many other aspects of leadership from the University of Alaska in research. I would note at the bottom there, Center for Alaska Native Health Research. This has the top quality rating of the National Institutes of Health. That's an R01 research program. Those are extremely competitive programs, and we've got top-notch faculty working in that area. In terms of challenges, we are a microcosm of this great state. And as you address the fiscal challenges of our state, we are addressing these challenges within the University of Alaska. Our location size, our isolation in many cases, our regionalism are all factors that we need to deal with every single day. Our students, while we have tremendous strengths at the university, and we're very proud of those and proud of many of our students, we do have low high school graduation rates in this state, a low college going rate, those who do go to college, low completion rate, and roughly half require developmental education. I would note that prior to this meeting today, I had a meeting, my top team, academic team, met with the Commissioner of Department of Education and Early Development and his team, working on alignment of the work in K-12 and the work in the University of Alaska. And that developmental education piece is critical. His commitment is to provide college and work-ready graduates for our economy and for the university system, and our commitment is to be aligned and to produce many more top quality teachers for our state. We have structural challenges that are a long time in building. Our budget, we rely, as many organizations in Alaska do, we have relied heavily on the state for our funding, and we have taken significant cuts over the last 3 years, as you know. In terms of revenue, we have relatively low private contribution rates. On the positive side, we have low tuition, but it also is not a positive when it comes to our revenue. And then finally, a historical legacy here that we're working hard to address, and that is our land grant deficit. Only Delaware got less land than we did in its land grant from Congress. Hawaii didn't get any land at all. They got cash, and that'd be fine too. But I'll get to what we're doing on that one in a moment. But I think part of our heavy reliance on the state for our resources is a function of our not getting the close to 500,000 acres we were due under the various federal acts. We got 110,000 acres.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
On your tuition, low tuition.
Yes.
Unless they're going to review it in a later slide, can you give us a brief snapshot of of what has happened with the tuition in the last three, 4 or 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. Yes, it has increased at the clip of about 5% each year. As we sit today, it is 0.84, so 84% of the WICHE states, the Western states average. So very low. And we use the WICHE states, those 15 states, because 90% of the college-going Alaskans who go outside to college go to one of those 15, or 14 because of us, go to one of those 14 states. So that's our benchmark for our tuition. So 0.84 of the average.
And when was the last tuition hike?
The current year. This current year. That's right. And I would note that among the, I talked about our challenges and I complimented some of our students. 2 years ago when I was proposing to the Board of Regents a 9% tuition increase and I had all the data and did my homework, the students came in and it was really unfair, Senator, because they brought in the UAA debate team and they just killed me. But I was really proud of them. They did a tremendous job, but they were proposing a 5% increase. And again, this year, our students came forward and proposed a 5% increase as a commitment to the quality of their education. So I take my hat off to their support.
Yes. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Johnson, on your second bullet on page 9, I would not to talk about that at this meeting because you've got a presentation and we want to get back in here in the budget detail a little bit. But I'd like for you and the Commissioner of Education and I to get together and talk about this because I read an article the other day and I wasn't really happy with it that came out of Anchorage. And I think there's some apples and oranges comparisons going on there. And so anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Johnson, as you look at, you made one of the comments about the budget being somewhat predicated, and there seems to be, and you made a note of there not being a lot of private sector contributions. Why do you, as compared to other private schools that many of us have gone to, I guess, why do you think the university doesn't fare very well in that? Is it because of efforts? Is it because that we don't have that many, but we do have some sizable corporations in the state mm-hmm. that certainly could step up to the plate with, I realize their graduates may not have come from the university, but there has been a push to try and get those alumni that do contribute a lot of money. Why is that the university is falling short or is not up there with other mm-hmm. other institutions?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think this is a big generalization, but I don't believe there's been a strong culture of philanthropy in Alaska. I think we have relied heavily on the state for funding of organizations, and we have relied heavily on particular corporations. We have the data and can bring it to the committee if you like, a real breakdown of the sources of revenue that go to the University of Alaska Foundation, our 501c3, our private fundraising arm. And you'll see from about 2015 a significant decline in corporate contributions to the University of Alaska. Alumni is another area of high interest. We have relatively low alumni giving rates, we have new leadership now in our foundation. Our foundation board of trustees has put a very high priority on outreach to alumni and on increasing private giving to the university. And we are in the early stages of a campaign taking advantage of these 100th anniversaries we have right now. So from 1917, and I went through the dates here, to 1923, our first graduate, we've got a good six-year run here. And many universities, private institutions, leading institutions in terms of philanthropy, run multi-year campaigns. And that's on our screen.
Mr. Chairman, one last question.
Yes, Senator Olson.
You made a comment that Alaska doesn't seem to be a very philanthropic state. Mm-hmm. I tend to disagree with that because if you look at the Pick, Click, Give program, you've got people that are rank and file Alaskans mm-hmm. who are residents here and are giving back to the state from their permanent fund dividend. Mm-hmm. And so that was what I was so impressed with when I saw that particular program. They've got themselves an executive director that's overseeing it. Mm-hmm. Could you just put that in a context so I could get your side or your perspective better than what you said?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Olson, I personally participate in that program, and I think one of the reasons why the Rasmussen Foundation stepped up and led that program is because they recognized that we needed to really build a philanthropic culture in Alaska, and I think they saw that lack and stepped up to fill that gap. And they've done, of course, a tremendous amount of work in building philanthropy across the state. But I think there's a lot of headroom, sir, in where we can go.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed, Mr. President.
Thank you. Now to the meat, to the budget. Yeah, here's just a quick summary of where we are and where we've been. So we started out in 15 with 375 in UGF from the state. And then were reduced to 351, then last year to 325. And as I believe you're aware, the governor's proposed budget is a continuation on the operating side of 325.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Mr. President, I would have been helpful to see your FY14, which I assume was somewhat higher and perhaps the peak of state support for the university system. If there was a FY14 bar up there, what was that number? Do you know off the top of your head?
Through the chair, Senator McKitchie, I'm going to turn to my right here. The number that's in my brain, which may be wrong, is 377, but I'm going to check. I passed. So it's 377 is the FY14 number.
Senator McKitchie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And was that the peak, 377, or was there a higher number previous?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I believe that was the peak general fund contribution.
Thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that all operating that you're reflecting here, or did that include deferred maintenance money that the state was providing also?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, this is in 15 and 16, that's just operating money, and to your question about deferred maintenance, I don't believe deferred maintenance came out of those years. The Regents did in FY17 reallocate some operating funds for deferred maintenance because the request we had for deferred maintenance in the capital budget was not provided. And so the Regents felt that that was so important that they would actually reallocate to fund that. And I believe that number was about 10.5 that they reallocated into deferred maintenance.
And to show the importance of the university to the legislature, I believe the legislature also appropriated a substantial amount in capital to the infrastructure of the university. You might want to comment upon that.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. The legislature has, and over years, there were very large capital budgets, as you know better than I do, that provided tremendous facilities for the university. And in addition to that, there were years with very generous contributions to deferred maintenance. That said, we continue to have a very large deferred maintenance backlog. It's in, depending on how you measure it, running from $800 million up to $1 billion. I'll talk about some of the steps we're taking to address that in a few minutes. And when we get new facilities, which we love, there are operating expenses, of course, that go with those, and often those are not provided. And so reallocation has to occur to address those costs.
I was referring to the power plant.
Okay.
Do you recall the total money that was committed to the university regarding that most important infrastructure?
Mr. Chairman, a very important piece of infrastructure, I agree, and I have the pleasure of seeing it go up in the sky when I'm in Fairbanks. I'm going to lean to my right to Michelle here. I'm thinking it's north of $200 million, but okay. So $245? Is that $245 million. And there are some bonds in there where we actually let bonds in addition to capital investments by the state.
So although there have been reductions, the university is viewed as a very important asset to the state of Alaska and to the legislature. Therefore, the investment, substantial investment in that power source.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also note before I touch this, in the spirit of your comment, there also work is ongoing to complete the engineering facility, the new building there on the Fairbanks campus. The new building in Anchorage is serving great good in the Anchorage community for that school, and work is ongoing to finish the engineering building in Fairbanks. This time next year, it'll be done, and there will be faculty and students working in that state-of-the-art facility. And I would note also the level of collaboration between the two schools of engineering at Anchorage and Fairbanks. Their advisory committees meet together, work together. Tremendous progress being made there. So, in terms of impacts of the budget reductions on the university, in terms of jobs, as we sit here today, there are, I think the precise number is 923 fewer people employed at the university than in FY15. We've also reduced assignments and made folks who were full-time part-time, and then we have also increased workloads of many of our employees and including instructional workloads. So our faculty might get less in terms of a service assignment or less in terms of a research or creative activity assignment, and in lieu of that, an increased instructional assignment. Lots of administrative function consolidation. I'll address some more of that in a minute or two. And reductions in service. We've closed some facilities. We've taken the conventional steps of reducing travel expenses and other kinds of expenses that are where we can. A tough thing for us has been to reduce research faculty startup and seat availability. It's a very competitive market, labor market, the research faculty market. At the high end, it takes money up front to recruit and retain these folks. And as our economy is heading south and we're under fiscal pressure, as the economy of the country is moving north and improving, those universities are seeing a lot more support. And in fact, with the increasing prominence of the Arctic as a subject of study, it's becoming very competitive there. Telecommunications, this is actually a bright light. Thanks to the good work of our folks and a partner in the industry, we've been able to bring down our wide access network costs by over $1 million per year. And then also going back to facilities, we are selling facilities. We are moving out of leased space off campus and consolidating on campus. And we're also defeasing debt and refinancing debt to bring our operating expenses down. So a number of impacts. There are many others, but this is some highlights of what we've been up to. It's a lot of hard work.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for you. Is there an active revenue arm that pursues opportunities for the university to provide research for the private sector? And has that program grown? And I'm not strong on competing with the private sector, but specifically in areas of research perhaps not available by private sector firms.
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, there is research happening in the private sector in Alaska, but unlike most states, we are the main and largest by far research producer in Alaska. In California, the private sector does a whole lot more than the University of California does. But in Alaska, we are the leader. So we partner with and actually provide most of the workforce for a lot of those private research organizations in the state. We certainly work with industry. I've met with folks in the oil and gas sector and other sectors, and they're very interested in doing more of their work here. But that takes time. There's no doubt about it, building those relationships. And as we produce more alumni who work in those organizations, they'll be going back to their home institution to get more of that research done. So there's a cycle that gets created here where our alumni end up in positions in industry and they call back to Professor Michiki to work on a project, and that just, you know, develops over time.
Senator Michiki.
Follow up, you stated earlier that we're the number one research institute perhaps on the planet in Arctic.
Yes.
Research issues. What about global outreach for potential revenue enhancing research? Is that something that the university is undertaking and trying to offset some of the state funding reductions?
Through the chair, Senator Marchicky, I can't list for you specific organizations we've gone after. We lead in, I mean, we are recognized by all other universities and organizations operating in the North as the leader. I think that I agree with you that's a good direction to go. There is a tension or a balance that we need to recognize and strive for, and that is conducting research that is relevant to the North and to Alaska in particular. So our mix of revenue certainly has implications globally. Mix of research has implications globally, but also we want to make sure that it's also highly relevant to what's happening in our state right now. So example would be the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. They do, it's world-class research on microgrids, and Alaska leads in microgrids in the world. So there are folks in Australia very interested in the work we're doing in Africa and Asia in the work that's happening there. So I think there are opportunities on that front, but it's a matter of resources. One thing that's important to recognize about research is our faculty and our researchers are not allowed under their research contracts to apply for additional research opportunities under that contract. That's all general fund supported. Does that make sense? And so when you're on a contract, you're only doing research on that contract, not pitching the next potential research customer. So that's why the GF piece of our research machine is so important.
Thank you, Senator Marchicky. Senator Bishop.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly to help answer a little bit where Senator Marchicky was going up. You know, I've worked closely with the university for the last 10 years, specifically in one area to help bring in more revenue for the university, and that's through the mine engineering department. Mm-hmm. And the university has I help some cross-border stuff with the Yukon Territory. The university has those linkage agreements going on now on sharing knowledge on mine training, and so there's cross-border collaboration there, and also with Mongolia and I think one other country where they're sharing some engineering stuff and training. So trying to expand that to bring more revenue, export our knowledge and bring revenue into the university. So that's one area.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Thank you, sir.
Can I? Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marchicky.
So just in light of a 14% reduction since FY14, is the university putting more efforts on those opportunities where perhaps they could bring in research revenue that might offset those costs, or are you at about the same level? Just seems that it may become more of a priority sector of University of Alaska to try to increase that proportion. Yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Marchicky, excellent point. I would point to the Regents reallocation. I mentioned that they reallocated some money into deferred maintenance last year. Even though our budget was cut, they pulled other funds and plugged it in there. Research was another area into which they reallocated. I've identified four major goals, high-level goals for the institution going forward. One clearly is workforce development. That's an essential role we play for the state. Second is research. So that's one of our top priorities. Three is economic development and diversification. And then fourth, which sort of undergirds all of those three, is building a culture of education in Alaska. So research is one of our top priorities, no question. And we are reallocating into that. It's difficult, given these reductions, but it's a very important priority for us.
Senator Marchicky.
I just, this state is largely dependent on, and I'm not going to say one sector, it is largely dependent on the revenue from one commodity. And I just, when I think about those opportunities, if we, our knowledge and experience in the Arctic, when we think about diversifying our economy, it seems like we need to put as much emphasis as possible on exporting that knowledge as a revenue base.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's enough about that, but I just it seems as you watch your general fund contributions from the state continue to be reduced, it seems like it should be a priority, and it sounds like it is. So.
Thank you, Senator McGinty. Mr. President, please continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It is. here's our thought a lot about our budget, and you know, instead of coming here and simply saying last year our budget was X and we'd like X plus X, you know, X plus Y or something like that, we've actually begun to look forward. And this glide path here represents an approach to thinking about our budget. Beginning in FY16, that's when we had $350 million in undesignated general funds from the state, and then heading out to 2025. And 2025 is the year it's projected we need 65% of Alaska's workforce to have some post-secondary education, 25% baccalaureate, 40% some career and technical certificate, license, or degree. And so we have asked ourselves the question, how do we moderate our reliance on the state and meet those compelling, essential workforce goals for the state? And so what this model does is say, okay, out in 2025, what's our goal? What's reasonable? What is a reasonable request in terms of general funds from the state? And we have identified 1.3 times the national average per student general fund appropriation. And so that number is there, $312 million. And we would bring it down gradually over that period of time, again, acknowledging the state's fiscal condition, but at the same time acknowledging the difficulty of the university in making moves very, very quickly. We have experienced a hard landing, and we believe that we can actually serve the state's needs more effectively over time through a gradual reduction in our dependence on the state for funding. What's not here, and we do have versions of this we could share with you, is the tuition piece. It's actually below the scale there. It's below, our revenue for tuition is below the 250, but the goal there is to move from 0.84 of the Wichita State's average up to the Wichita State's average, so one times that. In addition, we have goals on the philanthropic side and on the research side. Core key to making this work, of course, is enrollment, and it's key not only from a financial perspective, but it's essential from a mission and purpose perspective in order to hit that 65% by 2025 goal. Hence, one of the key purposes of the ongoing meetings with the Commissioner of Department of Education and Early Development. We've got to work with those folks to achieve these goals. We've got to increase college, high school graduation rates, increase college going rates. We've also got to reach out to that number I mentioned earlier in the presentation, the 115,000 Alaskans with some college and no degree. They will be essential in hitting those workforce goals and making this kind of financial model work.
We have a question, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, through the chair, President Johnson, have, in light of the final comment, diversified revenue there, has the university done an analysis of how that could benefit if the UMed road is created through that Elmore area? How much land do you own around that proposed corridor, and could you leverage it to create income opportunities for the university?
Well, through the chair, Senator Imhoff, I don't have those specific numbers, but I can say without a doubt that we own substantial land there and support strongly increased access to the UMed district from the north. We now have basically a superhighway that bisects the campus, UAA Drive, and it's extremely unsafe. So from a safety standpoint, that alone merits extending that access to the UMed district. All of our partners in the UMed district, ANTHC, South Central Foundation, Providence, all those folks are very strongly supportive of improving access to that area. And certainly APU as well. So there's a strong partnership of support. I think there are tremendous opportunities, frankly, commercial opportunities in that area for growth. I would love to see, you know, I've challenged our campuses and supported our campuses to, you know, what about research parks? What about business incubators? You know, how do we step out and really do things you see universities and businesses in partnership in other states build a more diversified economy? And I think that UMed District is a perfect locus for that kind of effort, just as right across the street from the University of Alaska campus, Fairbanks campus, makes a lot of sense. And in fact, there's some interesting work being done out at Auk Bay right now with commercial benefits, I think.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. I have two points that I'd like to bring up under this 10-year glide path framework. The first is a general question on how the designation of the Southeast campus plays in this glide path, if any, and what purpose did the board have in making this determination for its new role in Southeast?
Through the chair, well, you are the chair. Senator Hoffman, I assume you're asking about the Regent's recent decision to assign UA Southeast the administrative leadership for teacher education programs?
Yes.
Okay. That is really tied to that workforce goal. At this point, Senator, we import 70% of the new teachers hired every year in Alaska. And the data are clear that they churn at a much higher rate turnover than teachers prepared in Alaska. And that's especially the case in rural Alaska. So there's really a very strong interest in increased accountability in our teacher education programs to drive those numbers up. And UAS has a strong program, one of their most innovative programs that I think can be scaled rather quickly in order to hit that goal, is a master's degree program where a student with a baccalaureate degree can come onto campus for 6 weeks in the summertime and then actually be out in the schools teaching while taking online coursework via distance and then get their MAT degree at the end of that first year. We've worked with the Department of Education and Early Development and school districts across the state to have provisional certification so that those students actually get paid while they're out there. And so I think that's a real positive note and an opportunity for UAS leadership in this area. I think UAS will really make this its top priority, and I think that was one of the selling points to the Board of Regents, not that UAA and UAF wouldn't make it a high priority. Their missions in terms of nursing education, engineering, large management schools, research, mean that they've got some other competing priorities. UAS, however, would make it its top priority. And I think that went a long way in persuading the Regents to move in that direction.
And I think this might be a good time to delve into, while we have the 10-year glide path, get into where the Senate has been going with our 5-4-3 plan, especially when the governor had said last year the budget, in the State of the State, State of the Budget, he had said that last year the budget was critical and this year the budget is in a crisis situation. And I believe the Senate is of that same mindset. And last year we made some structural changes, one program that, you know, we made some structural changes to the mental health programs by one bill, Senate Bill 74, and the other one to corrections in Senate Bill 91. Mm-hmm. But I point out to the people of my region the structural changes that we did with the revenue sharing program. We made, we understood the financial situation that State of Alaska was in, and we couldn't continue operating that program on a sustainable basis. So we restructured it, renamed it, because we don't have the revenue to share anymore. It's an assistance program, even though we're in tight times. So we asked them to take a 50 cents on a dollar reduction. In talking to my people back home on education and others, we're not asking them to take 50 cents on a dollar reduction. We're not asking them to take 25 cents on a dollar reduction. But when you move in a an area in of time in our history where we're facing a continued $3.2 billion deficit and have made already substantial reductions. I ask people, if you are in a critical or a crisis mode, can you take reduce your budget under that crisis mode by 10%, knowing that in the future, if you don't, you're going to end up in a very, very serious situation? And most of them said yes. But we're not asking them to take a 10% reduction. We are asking them to tighten their belts 5 cents on a dollar. And most people say, yes, we can tighten our belts 5 cents on a dollar. The problem with our major four drivers are that their budget amount is so substantial. Mm-hmm. When you multiply that number out, the number is so staggering. But it's whatever that number may be, it's still 5 cents on a dollar, tightening yourself by 5%. So I know the governor has worked with the Board of Regents and other departments to come up with the budget that he has presented. But from my viewpoint, we still need to continually look at where we are and acknowledge the deficit that we have, mm-hmm. and try to do what we can to live within our means. We heard Justice Stowe make his presentation on a separate branch of government. He acknowledged that, and he has presented us this year the only department with continued belt tightening. I made a special order presentation on the Senate floor, which is a little bit unusual for me, and if people know my history, but I did get up on the floor and tipped my hat to him, acknowledging the financial condition that the state is in right now. That's not to say that we will continue to look at additional revenue measures, but are we going to get, or is Senator von Imhoff, who is responsible for making a presentation, working with your department, going to get a working participation with your office to try to look at prioritizing what can be done regarding the target of a 5% reduction, because that is the target of the Senate. The Senate, I guess, has taken the lead in tightening the state's budget, and we have went from an $8 billion budget down to north of a $4 billion budget. But we still have a $3 billion deficit, which the people of Alaska are looking to us to come up with solutions. And in order to accomplish that, we have to work with all agencies. Right now we're concentrating on the four major drivers, but I think that is the question that I have at this point. And I wonder if you might address that, since you have the 10-year glide path framework before us today.
Well, Senator, thank you for that question and the strong expression of commitment to a sustainable fiscal future for the state. And I, like the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court here in Alaska, acknowledge the very severe situation we're in and the need to reduce our expenses in Alaska. There's no question, and I think we've been clear that we do have expenses here. I think it is important to note that that we have taken a 14% reduction over the last couple of years. We are engaged in contingency budget planning process just as we were last year. We have an iterative process. We're engaged in it right now, looking at that 5% 5%. How do we take that 5% reduction? And so we'll be briefing the regents in their meeting in March, and then again later this spring on our thinking about what we can do. The challenge at this point is, after these 14% cuts we've already taken, is what do we stop doing? That's the essential. As I travel around our campuses and meet with our people, our faculty, our staff, our students, the time when we can simply shave a little here, shave a little there, shave is past, I think. And so we've got to really make those hard calls, and we've made some of those already and through the strategic pathways process. But there will need to be more of those tough decisions, and I appreciate your position because that's you're an elected leader charged with to make those decisions. But that's what the regents are going to. That's what we're struggling with at this point: is what do we stop doing? Who do we stop serving? Because there are no easy solutions at this point, as I'm sure you appreciate.
And our challenge is that we need to assure the people of Alaska that services continue. But if we do not have the financial means to meet payroll, mm-hmm. then all of us are in trouble.
Yeah.
And that is the overall factor that when Senator came in, the stark reality is we have to look at the long-term health. But if we aren't able to meet payroll, then whatever reductions we have made will potentially fall apart. We have savings. We started off with, 4 or 5 years ago of $16.7 billion. Today we have north of $3 billion. If that reserve weren't met, because we have a constitutional requirement to balance our budget, right. there are going to be substantial reductions if we can't come up with a solution. And to us, in the Senate, a small step forward is acknowledgement that an additional 5% does not, even though we know we've made substantial reductions, an additional 5% does not seem that substantial in light of the consequences.
Well, thank you, Senator. I would be pleased to continue working with Senator von Imhoff on this issue so that the committee is well served. So thank you, sir.
Did you have a question, Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if I could request from Legislative Finance a graph that depicts the reductions. So we've seen a graph from Legislative Finance on the total spend of each agency, and you just spoke to that. K through 12 is receiving over 26% of all the UGF that we spend. Health and Social Services, over 26% of every UGF dollar. DOT, I can't remember the number, and the university, but different agencies have taken different amounts of cuts. And what I'd like to point out for the people of Alaska, and I know members here know that, but the administration is over 90-95% of the state's budget. The judiciary, the judicial branch of government, is 2% or less. The legislative branch of government is 2%, right around that number. So we can only affect, inside of those two small areas, a very minimal amount of cuts when people are looking at the legislature cutting our budget, or even the judiciary branch cutting theirs. There's a rallying cry from the people of Alaska to cut the budget, but quite frankly, we need to cut our budget, but it will not make the impact that we need to make, as the co-chairman spoke to, if we don't look at the administration's overall cut. And so the graph I'm talking about is including the legislature, including the judiciary, what cuts have we made over that FY15 time period to now. And I think what we'll see is that, yes, the university has made cuts, but we have other departments that have been cut upwards of 44%. And so it might be helpful for us to see that in black and white, per se, in a colored graph, so that we understand that as we move forward. And, we are looking for prioritizations, Mr. President, on if we have to take a cut, and I would support the the co-chairman that 5% is a small cut. It's been said it's a nickel on a dollar. We know that all of those dollars can be different if they leverage federal dollars. You know, we need to consider each dollar very carefully. But 5 cents on the dollar is a small reduction that all departments should be targeting, and certainly the bigger four that the chairman has brought in front of us. We need their participation in a positive way just to move the needle on putting Alaska's government at right size so the people have trust that we're using the dollars that they invest to the highest and best use for services that they're receiving. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a graph would be helpful.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Senator Machicki.
I'll make it quick. I know you want to move on, Mr. Chairman. It's just this is a very important slide. We're used to Alaska being an outlier, but 200% of the national mean on a per-student FTE basis is an extreme outlying condition. I think everyone would agree with that. And we're sort of used to being well above flat with other states, but 200% is a challenge. I'm going to request if you share through the chair your data set. And I mean, we know the further we move east, the more sort of old money alumni support universities, right? They've been around for a couple of hundred years in some cases, and they have a very large group of sort of older families that support those universities. We only have a few in that condition here, but I'm kind of wanting to understand the western states, which is probably a better comparison. So I don't know if you're willing to share that data set, but I'd like to understand what it looks like for other newer states, where they are in the mean, and some of the methods they've used to bring themselves down to closer to a one-to-one.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we're happy to provide that information. I would note that we do have some data from the Great Recession when those states were ratcheting down general fund appropriations and in some cases quadrupling tuition in order to address their challenges. Those aren't the only tools that were used. A real deep push into online education and stronger partnerships with K-12, dual enrollment programs, those sorts of things. Stronger community colleges. That's an interesting opportunity here as well. So happy to provide those data to you, though.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Machicki. Please continue. We have a little more than 25 minutes. We do have a hard deadline of 11 o'clock that the Senate President wants to meet with some members of this Finance Committee. So please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Governor's budget highlights 325 UGF, and he's also reduced our receipt authority. He does include the tuition rate increase that the Board of Regents have approved. It's real easy math here, even for me, where 1% tuition increase is basically $1 million. So 5% tuition increase is $1 million in revenue based on current enrollment. And then a reduction in our PCNs. This is mostly cleanup of PCNs of 225. This is, yes, a bit of an eye chart, and I certainly won't go through all of this. It'll be tedious, especially given the time we've got, but I think just a couple of points. One is that 71% of our budget, of our expenses, goes to student instruction, 21% to research, and 8% to service. So that gives you, I think, an idea of the emphasis, the priority that we place on those three parts of our mission. In terms of the number of employees, it's sort of similar numbers. 75% of our full-time employees are focused on student instruction, 17% on research, and 7% on service. I would note, just hopping over to costs recuperated, 16% of our total expenditures comes from tuition and fees charged to students. I've made this point earlier, but just to reemphasize, in research, for each dollar of general fund, a little bit north of $4 in revenue from other sources is generated.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Johnson, I don't have to have the answer right now. You could get back to me, but how much of this total on this page is administration?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I can certainly get that number back to you. That is something we track and report. So, yes, sir.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, do your students know, in looking at this particular page, if we look at the budget and the UGF versus the DGF, is the student population informed that the state is picking up 50% of those instructional costs? Is there any way that they, as students in the system, know that we value education enough to pick up, from this particular allocation, over 50% of the costs every year? And I assume in previous years it would be even more than that, mm-hmm. If we looked at the same breakdown.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I am confident that our student leaders know that, those students who have gotten involved in student government and sometimes come and visit you. They're well aware of that. We go through those numbers with them. The student body as a whole, though, I would venture to say is not aware of that.
Mr. President, I was wondering if there could be a line on your invoice that reflects how much the state is actually contributing to reduce the cost. And the only reason I say that is because when people are informed, then they can be better advocates for what they want. In the past, years ago, when I was first in the legislature, students were asking me to oppose all kinds of hydrocarbon development that were generating all of the income that was being invested in their education. And that is certainly every right for a student to advocate for, but then I asked if they were supportive of an income tax or a state sales tax, and they weren't supportive of that either. And so there just was a lack of understanding of actually how we were funding mm-hmm. The university, which is being supported substantially by hydrocarbon development in our state or other natural resource development in mining or otherwise. So that's the only reason I say that there is a connection, and if we could get that nexus in more people's minds as understanding where the money is coming from for some of these items, it may be helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Mr. President.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator McKinnon. I see your point there. This is this big imperative that our Board of Regents have embraced, 65% of the workforce prepared by 2025. We will not account for all of that 65%. Of course, there are other post-secondary and career technical institutions across the state, but we are certainly devoting ourselves to meeting that critical goal for the state's economy. It's, of course, important at a macro level for Alaska to have that talented workforce. It's also important for every single individual who is able to benefit from additional post-secondary education. Again, whether it's a license or a certificate or a bachelor's degree or some degree that's higher, there are tremendous benefits there in terms of increased incomes, in terms of increased health status, in terms of lower incarceration rates, and on and on.
And on this slide, have you taken into consideration the growth areas of the state, one of the larger ones in the state, particularly in my part of the world out there in the YK Delta, is healthcare providers, healthcare services?
Absolutely, Senator. Healthcare is a biggie. It's really heading north. All of the projections say there'll be increased demand for healthcare workforce. So, yes, sir, absolutely.
And while that is happening, are you looking at trying to get more of your budget percentage-wise from those new positions to help pay for their education at the same time? Because in order for them to get that degree, if they go to the lower 48, I assume that in many instances at UW and others, they end up having to pay a higher cost since we have some lower tuition fees.
Senator, yes, I think we need to put more capacity in that area, and it's one of the region's top-level priorities to be funded by the budget request for FY18. In addition to that, we're looking to put more money into needs-based financial aid. We are anemic in that area. We have some student aid programs, and those are merit-based, but we need to put some more resources into needs-based programs. And third, through the strategic pathways process that I'll talk about in just a moment, we're looking at our health programs and what other steps need to be taken to increase our production of people in the health industry across the state. It's a top priority for us. We have people, Roald Helgeson, by the way, from AMTHC is part of that group. And contributing substantially. I had the pleasure of being in Bethel at their commencement this past spring, and 67 people, I think, walked across the stage. And the lion's share of those folks were getting certificates they were community health aides. So really adding to the capacity in the region, very important, I think.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Please continue, Mr. President.
Thank you. I mentioned our goal of 65, this is an array of the states taken from 2013, and this is the percentage of 25 to 64-year-olds with a college degree, associate's degree or higher, and you see we're at 37%. Our goal is 65. There are no states as of 2013 at that goal, and I would say, based on meetings I have with other state system presidents across the country, this is all of their number one priority. Is to increase attainment, post-secondary education, in order to increase competitiveness of their states, both nationally and internationally. It is the rallying cry across the country, and I'm confident that if you attend an NCSL meeting, or that this will be a top priority there too. And I'm sure that at National Governors Association meetings, this is a top item being discussed there too.
Senator Machiki.
Quick one. Are you the slide where you talked about 65% by 2025 talked about some post-secondary education. Was that definition of that at least an associate's degree?
Through the chair, Senator McKitchie, it's actually not. We would like it to be, but there are going to be many valuable certificates and licenses that would be counted in that 65% that do not require necessarily an associate's degree.
Just a little confused, because this was an AA or higher in your 37%. So if you included those with some other sort of certificate, what would that number be today? Is that...
Through the chair, Senator McKitchie, I don't know that number. It's certainly going to be north of 37, no doubt about it. Included there would be, licenses to be an electrician, for example, which we wouldn't provide, but through apprenticeship programs. So that would be included. And that's one of the reasons why not only are we collaborating with Department of Education and Early Development, but also with Labor and Workforce Development. They, too, support this goal.
Thank you, Senator McKitchie. Mr. President.
There are two views of Alaska here, and basically they make the point that we are a low education, high wage state. So you see the lower right cell there, along with Wyoming, which you'd expect, another natural resource state, where our citizens on average have relatively high personal income, at least as of the decennial census data taken in 2010, and relatively low college attainment. This next slide shows the same thing, although the axes are flipped. So you see that we are once again off the line in terms of higher income than you would expect given our educational attainment. Now, the statisticians tell me that regression analysis, which is the method used to do this description here, this chart, is not simply a cool way to look at correlations and causation, but it's also a law. Meaning that over time, you will regress to the mean. And the question is, at what point on that line will you regress to the mean and when? And what concerns me a great deal and gives me a sense of urgency and commitment here is the threat, if we don't increase our educational attainment, then we could safely predict that Alaska will move down to hit that line where our incomes across the state are considerably lower than they are today. And so the challenge here is, how do we, within the very serious fiscal situation that you've all described well, how do we move Alaska to the right on this table here, so that we're able to protect our incomes through increased higher education attainment?
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Johnson, just a comment. Alaska is going to, in my opinion, have to advance to expand its economy to move the needle further to the right, because you look at those other states, they've got a tremendous amount of, you know, we're just a one drum show here, and they got a brass band, so we need more opportunity. And that's not a ding, it's just an observation.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Mr. President.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bishop, I agree with you, and we're going to have to train up a whole lot more tuba players and drummers and others to make it work. Here's our funnel. I don't share this with you to put a pall of depression on this session today, but this is just real tough here, and this I think this really emphasizes the point that we've got to do a much better job in partnership with K-12 on the one hand, with community organizations and with families across the state to drive up college, high school graduation and college going, and at the other, with the other hand, I think to Senator Bishop's point a bit, and perhaps Senator Michiki, reaching out to employers with the other hand, so that we're creating a a funnel of education and employment for this state. So,
please proceed.
Senator Dunleavy has a question.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair.
Way down there, I didn't see you.
Through the chair.
Apologize.
Can you go back to, oh, there, right there. No, no, no. The funnel. Are you, at this stage of the game, are you, through the chair, President Johnson, are you satisfied with your recruitment efforts of in-state Alaskan students?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, no, I am not. That's why you're seeing or hearing a privately funded campaign to lift the university up. That's, you know, radio, television, that sort of thing, to try to get the word out there. Business as usual, I think that was the term the chair used, is business as usual recruiting is insufficient. And so there is actually funding in our budget for FY18 for increased recruiting, not only of the traditional high schoolers that we need, but again, those folks out here in Alaska who have some college and no degree, that's a large number of people, and we won't hit the workforce numbers solely and only by relying on our high school graduates. We've got to reach out to other Alaskans with high-quality, convenient programs for them. We can't expect people to quit their jobs, move to complete their degrees. We've got to do, we have many online programs today, but we've got to keep moving in that direction to make sure that we're meeting needs on their terms, not our terms.
Through the chair, just a couple.
How
is it determined when a student needs a developmental course? Is it Accuplacer? Is that the assessment that you're using?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, yes.
Okay. So that one test determines if someone needs developmental coursework. Next question, I'll do these really quickly. How many of these students are non-residents? Can we get that data? In other words, student applies to your school, they have to take a developmental, or they qualify for developmental coursework as opposed to a 100 freshman level. How many of those are non-residents? Can we find that out?
We can certainly find that out.
Okay. And then, through the chair, what is the total cost or the amount of money dedicated to developmental coursework in the university system? In other words, what's the total amount of money being dedicated to that approach of developmental coursework per year?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we'll get that number for you.
And then real quick here, how many of the students taking developmental coursework are UA scholars? In other words, they qualify for the UA scholar, yet they're still through the Accuplacer required to take developmental coursework. Can we get that data?
Yes.
And then last question. How many of these students that are in developmental coursework receive the governor's performance scholarship? And can we get that data as well?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Imhoff.
Thank you. So through the chair, President Johnson, the slide is very interesting. 29 won't graduate and 40 won't attend college. Those numbers are alarming. I believe that Northern Trust did a Northern Economics did a study a couple years ago. I don't know if you've seen it. Tried to explain maybe some of the causations behind those numbers. I think that we're going to have Department of Education present today. I think that I will ask them that question if they've seen that study. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, could you let the committee know either today or later, or to Senator Von Imhoff at her committee hearing, how online degree seeking may be affecting the university, or if there's a way to quantify that? Looking at this, I wonder, how effective the instructors are at the university of engaging students. If this were just a business and I were looking at outcome, this may be a program under consideration for cut. If you are only succeeding at 5%, if the measurement outcome is graduation, and that's how we're measuring success, this is disappointing that only 5% of Alaska students after five decades of investing up to $377 million at the high to only have five folks graduating in 10 years. I know it's more important than that. I know that we have people attending college for other reasons than just a graduation, and that the university is valuable. But what I'd like to know is how we're measuring what's happening in the classroom. Do the teachers, do the instructors, do the university professors try to help the students graduate? Because it seems like there's a disconnect. Help me with the funnel only producing five students.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, important question, complex, certainly. A few responses. One is this isn't the only outcome. This is simply baccalaureate. So there are many vocational technical certificates and degrees that are granted here that make that number increase. There are also, particularly in a lot of vocational areas, folks can get jobs without finishing up. And so frequently in a lot of our trades programs, for example, somebody has the skill, they might be working part-time for an employer, and instead of finishing up, the employer says, come on, let's go full-time here, you're ready to go, I can tell, you can weld, or whatever it might be. As to the quality of what happens in our classrooms, our faculty are peer-reviewed regularly, and our students review all of the classes they take. Our programs also are institutionally accredited, and those are very rigorous review programs by an external organization that makes sure that our student learning outcomes are met. Finally, many of our programs have specialized accreditations where, you know, education is an example, engineering, business, management, nursing, where, again, quality control is the top criterion. Now, I don't have the number right off the top of my head here, but I can share a number that comes from the K-12 education literature, which basically says that 30% in the variance in how students do in school comes from in-school variables, 70% comes from variables outside of school. And if we applied that to the University of Alaska, and I'm not sure whether you can necessarily just apply it to us, but if it did apply, then yes, there's some lifting that we need to do within the institution, but there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done outside of the institution to prepare our students more effectively for success at the university.
Thank you. Senator McKinnon?
Mr. Chairman, I'll just put, maybe we can find out in subcommittee what the university is doing to chase graduates or undergraduates for master's degree programs, and is there an increased effort to produce better results and retain students in the state versus having them migrate for master's programs outside of the state?
Senator Bishop and Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you've got a hard deadline, and there's some other good slides here. Maybe I'll just save this slide because there's a lot of information in this slide that needs to be talked about to get the full picture, and I don't want to take the committee's time. I'll defer and go over it with the subcommittee chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Machicki.
So this is the second case of where you're a victim of your own graphics, right? I think it's fair to say you're not responsible for the 70% that are not graduating high school and don't attend college. You're responsible for the bottom 30%, and if you just go on the bottom 30% that make it to the university, you've got an 18% success rate. If you take it to attendees of University of Alaska, you've got a 50% success rate that they graduate in 6 years, but many Alaskan students attend college longer than many states in the lower 48, so you have a higher success rate of graduates. Okay. I would just think about when you're just a little friendly advice that when you're putting a graphic up here, it's somewhat confusing. I think one place that you are, the University of Alaska system can be more successful is the 16 that go out of state of the 30. You've got less than 50% of them going to one of our unis, right? And I don't know if that includes APU on your not in the system students or not, but that's the target. That 16 that go out of state, I think, is increasing that proportion and keeping them right here at home. But anyway, maybe I didn't put that nicely, but I do think you're a victim of your own graphic in this case.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I thank you for that friendly counsel. We do have a piece of that 69 or 70 up there. There's no question about it. As I understand the research, the single most important in-school factor contributing to a K-12 student's success is the quality of the teacher. The quality of the teacher. And that's one of the drivers for our work in strengthening our college of education is moving that up. So we do, frankly, play a role in that. And I'll throw me into that briar patch of trying to help build the K-12 system as well. So
thank you, Senator Machicki. Mr. President, we are running out of time. I would like to have you review your other slides unless you have some additional overarching comments that you'd like to make. I think we've had a very robust dialogue at this table. The people at this table, the senators, fully understand the importance of the university and what it provides, and I personally thank the university for their persistence in bringing dollars in. Every dollar that we give to the university, you double and triple. I'm a product of the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, a graduate. But is there any additional comments that you'd like to make? And we would give the rest of the presentation to Von Imhoff and her subcommittee. But I would like to take the final moments to have you provide us with any closing comments regarding the university and its importance and understanding of the difficult, very, very difficult position that we in the Senate Finance Committee are facing.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And congratulations, too, on the honor that you received from the university last year. It was well deserved. To wrap it up quickly, there's much more here, of course, in terms of the consolidations that the regents have made decisions about and we're in the implementation process of. There's more about our land grant plan to actually go back and to D.C., create a federal framework so that we can come here and actually have a legally defensible land grant. Later today I'm going to speak to the joint chamber here in Juneau in the state chamber, and I'm talking about the state of the University of Alaska. And that speech is going to be in three chunks, if you will, because my brain is only big enough to handle three chunks. And one is going to be to talk about how strong this university is and to really highlight points of pride in our university. And I think it's important that we keep that in mind. There, yes, we are in tough straits in Alaska, and that's the second piece, is we face challenges, no question about it. And the third piece is really a statement of confidence and optimism for our ability to work through this. We've had hard times before. We will have hard times again. And if we make sure that our values as a state are prominently held up and we connect to those deep, deep roots of grit and persistence and commitment and working together, I'm confident that we can continue as a great university to the credit of this state and to build and diversify this state going forward. So I thank you very, very much for the opportunity to present to the entire committee today, and I'm enthusiastic about continued work with Senator von Imhoff on the subcommittee to address any issues that any of you may have. Thank you, sir, and thank you, committee members.
Senator McKinnon, if we could go around the table, are there any additional remarks that members have? Again, we're not doing business as usual. We are going through a process of trying to hear from our four major drivers that encompass the vast majority of the expenditures of the state of Alaska, and we are conducting these oversights so that the people of Alaska and the legislature can get an understanding differently in a more in-depth nature of what these major drivers are doing for the state of Alaska. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, first off, I have confidence in you. I have confidence in the Board of Regents, and I very much appreciate that you have not taken on business as usual, that you acknowledge that the state is in some pretty tough times, facing $3 billion. And the Chief Justice set the tone for the legislature, and I know that change is difficult, and I appreciate Senator Michiki's comments because, again, numbers can say anything you want them to say, and so you have to be very careful with numbers. But I just wanted to put on the record that I appreciate all the hard work that you and your team have done to reach out to individual legislators already this session and keeping them informed of how great your university is. There was some things in the paper that were not flattering for the university as a whole. And again, I would just say that change is difficult. And for those that don't know what this legislature has asked of you as the appropriators, I just want you to hold your head high and just appreciate how you've been reaching out and trying to collaborate to protect those members that may not understand what you are trying to accomplish on their behalf here. So I'm trying to say that very delicately, but you have done an admirable job given the situation that you're facing, and already a huge cut to the university of 14% that you had to accommodate based on what we were available to provide to you as a appropriation body. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Just real brief, I concur with Senator McKinnon's overview, but I want to take it a little step deeper. You know, we've got a world-class university, and you've got a tough job, but that also requires keeping the morale up with the rank-and-file people that do the work in the trenches every day, because that university is only as good as the people you got executing the mission behind you.
Yep.
So it's a tough job. And they need to. They're all smart people, and they can add and subtract. And I know that they're going to step up and do their part to help as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't state it any better. Also, a proud graduate of the University of Alaska system. I think the two co-chairs and the vice chairs shared my support rather eloquently, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Senator Imhoff.
I'm good.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
It was a great presentation, I think, in spite of the situation that we find ourselves in. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. President, do you have any closing comments to the committee and to the people of Alaska?
Just to thank you for your support and appreciation for the hard work that you're doing on behalf of our state. Thank you all.
Brief Eddies. We will be meeting later on this afternoon, I believe it's 1 o'clock, to take up the next department. It is scheduled at 1:30. With that, we will stand adjourned.